Jesus taught a great lesson about love when he answered a question that a Pharisee had posed to him. This question is found in the answer in Matthew chapter 22. Beginning in verse 34. Matthew 22, verse 34. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." But what does loving my neighbor look like? That's going to be the focus of tonight's lesson. What does loving my neighbor actually look like on a daily basis? And we're going to go back all the way to Leviticus 19 to answer that question. Because in the text for tonight, verses 9 through 18, we are given a picture of what loving your neighbor actually looks like. And it's a tremendous example for all of us. Let's turn back to Leviticus 19. The first two verses show us that one of the things that loving your neighbor looks like is providing for their needs. Providing for their needs. Beginning in verse 9 of Leviticus 19. "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God." So, the first thing we see is helping our neighbor means providing for their necessities while not making them feel like it's a handout. Notice what they were to do. They were to leave part of it in the field. Now, they weren't to gather it up and take it to their neighbor. They were to leave it in the field so the neighbor could pick it up. So the neighbor would also feel like he's involved in his feeding. So it would not make the neighbor feel like it was a handout. So when we help our neighbor, we have to keep their self-esteem in mind. And remember that we don't want to make them feel bad in any way. We want to provide for them whenever they need something, but be careful about their self-esteem. In Deuteronomy 24, in the second giving of the law, the second recounting of the law, we have this found in verses 19 through 22. Deuteronomy 24, beginning with verse 19. There we're given an even more detailed picture of providing for our neighbor's needs. Deuteronomy 24, beginning in verse 19. "When you reap your harvest in your field, and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore I command you to do this thing." Remember the account of Boaz and Ruth, Ruth chapter 2. Boaz told his workers to do what? Leave a certain amount in the field for Ruth. Now, he didn't tell them to give it to Ruth, but to leave it in the field so Ruth could get it, so Ruth could pick it up. So when we provide for people who are in need, not only in mind we're doing it, we also need to keep in mind their feelings. In other words, you know, their self-esteem, not do it in such a way that we make them feel low or inferior. And something very important to keep in mind. If we love our neighbor, then we're going to keep that in mind when we help them, in whatever way we help them. The next four verses tell us another, or start to fill in the picture of what loving your neighbor is like, and that is be honest with your neighbor. Beginning in verse 11 of our text, you shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. You shall not cheat your neighbor, nor rob him. The wages of him who is hired shall not remain with you all night until morning. You shall not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but shall fear your God. I am the Lord. Honesty, in all of its applications, is a requirement of loving your neighbor. It's a requirement. Back in Leviticus chapter 6, a few pages back in your Bible, beginning in verse 1, we have some details about honesty. Leviticus 6, 1, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, if a person sins and commits a trespass against the Lord by lying to his neighbor about what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or about a pledge, or about a robbery, or if he's extorted from his neighbor, or if he's found what was lost and lies concerning it and swears falsely, in any one of these things that a man may do in which he sins, then it shall be because he sinned and is guilty, that he shall restore what he's stolen, or the thing which he's extorted, or what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or the lost thing which he found, or all that about which he has sworn falsely. He shall restore its full value, add one-fifth more to it, and give it to whomever it belongs on the day of his trespass offering. So honesty is an absolute necessity of loving our neighbor. If we really love our neighbor, we're going to be extremely honest, far more than the world thinks about being honest, in all of those applications of being honest. And the Bible talks about the new man, both in the book of Ephesians and the book of Colossians. In both of those cases, the new man is an honest man. The new man is the one that's been born again. The new man is the one that has repented and been baptized. Came up a new creature. What kind of creature is he? He's an honest one. He's honest in his dealings with his neighbor in every possible way. If we borrow something from our neighbor, we return it. We don't return it in bad shape. We return it in good shape. Maybe even better shape than we got it, if possible. So in every possible way, we are honest with our neighbor. We don't try to deceive our neighbor, take something that doesn't belong to us. So our neighbor, of course, can be any of these. King Ahab, one of the worst kings in the Old Testament. The story about Naboth, you know, he had this vineyard next to the king and King Ahab wanted it. Well, Naboth was Ahab's neighbor. And what did Ahab do? The vineyard. Wasn't his. Of course, his wife had something to do with it. And you remember Ahab did not come out well in that deal. He took something of his neighbor that didn't belong to him. So in our dealings with our neighbors, regardless of who our neighbor is, not just the person living next to us, we need to be honest. People need to see Christians, members of the New Testament church, as people who are extremely honest. In every possible way, we need to show the world that we are honest and sincere and upfront type of people. We need to be a neighbor with integrity. We need to be a neighbor that keeps promises. If you're like me, it really bothers you when someone says they're going to do something and then doesn't do it. They could have done it. They just didn't do it. Well, in Numbers chapter 30, a few pages on over from our text, notice verses 1 and 2 of that chapter. Numbers 30, verses 1 and 2. Then Moses spoke to the heads of the tribes concerning the children of Israel, saying, "This is the thing which the Lord has commanded. If a man makes a vow to the Lord, or swears an oath to bind himself by some agreement, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth." The rest of the chapter talks about several instances of making vows. Keep our promises. When we tell others we're going to do something, we need to do everything in our power to do it. Exactly how we said we were going to do it, when we were going to do it, everything. Because if we really love our neighbor and love other people, that's what we're going to do, because that's how we want to be treated. Because we want people, when they say they're going to do something for us, we want them to do it. So if we want them to do it, then we need to set the example of doing it for them. So be a neighbor with integrity. Keep your promises. That's loving your neighbor. That's what it looks like. In that text, we need to make sure that we don't delay in paying what we owe. If I love my neighbor, I'm not going to delay. I'm not going to wait in paying what I owe. You know, he talks in our text there about the wages of him who is hired shall not remain with you all night until morning. When we owe something, we pay it. See, if I love my neighbor, that's what I'm going to do, because that's how I want to be treated. If somebody owes me something and they're supposed to pay it by the end of the week, then I expect at the end of the week. Well, if I love my neighbor, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to pay him, and I'm not going to wait. In Deuteronomy chapter 24, we see this emphasized there. Deuteronomy 24, verses 14 and 15. You shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy, whether one of your brethren or one of the aliens who's in your land within your gates. Each day you shall give him his wages, and not let the sun go down on it. For he's poor, and he has set his heart on it, lest he cry out against you to the Lord, and it be sin to you. Well, that's pretty straightforward. But that's also in the New Testament. In James chapter 5, James says almost the exact same thing. Notice James chapter 5, verse 4. James writes, "Indeed, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out. And the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth." That's what you are supposed to do. Don't delay in paying what you owe. Don't find excuses for not paying what you owe. Because again, you're to be honest with your neighbor. That's part of loving your neighbor. That's what it looks like. And don't take advantage of your neighbor. Our text says, "You shall not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall fear the Lord your God." Don't take advantage of your neighbor, regardless of what your neighbor is like. Now, he mentions being deaf or blind, or but anything would fit in that category. He's talking about taking advantage of people. It says, don't take advantage of people, because that's being dishonest. That's cheating. That's deceiving. In Deuteronomy chapter 27, a lot of these things are repeated in Deuteronomy, because Deuteronomy is a repeating of the law. In Deuteronomy 27, verse 18, says, "Cursed is the one who makes the blind to wander off the road." See? He's a stumbling block to the blind. So do not take advantage of your neighbor. So loving your neighbor, number one, means providing for their needs. Number two, it means being honest with your neighbor. Number three, it means being just and fair in all your dealings. Notice verses 15 and 16 of our text now. You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. In righteousness you shall judge your neighbor. You shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. Practice justice. Be known as someone who is fair and just and does what is right. That's what you need to be known as. In Exodus chapter 23, going back a little bit in our Bibles, this time, beginning in verse 1. You shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil. Nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute. Fair and just and right. That's the way we're supposed to be. In Deuteronomy chapter 16. Again, when the law was given, again, or reiterated, Deuteronomy 16. Verses 19 and 20. You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality nor take a bribe. For a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. You shall follow what is altogether just, that you may live and inherit the land which the Lord your God is giving you. We have to treat people fairly. If I love my neighbor as myself, I'm going to treat my neighbor fairly because I want to be treated fairly. I don't want to for people to not treat me with justice and fairness. So I have to be careful to make sure I don't show partiality. I have to be careful about false charges and slander. What an awful thing that is. We just read it in Exodus 23. False charges and slander. Once we make false statements about people, they can't be taken back. I mean, once they're said, they're said. There isn't any way to redo the damage or anything. Once it's done, it's done. So no wonder loving your neighbor means that you don't spread false reports. You don't slander your neighbor. Because that type of speech, those type of words do irreparable damage. And if you've never had that happen to you, you probably will sometime in your life. People say things about you that aren't true. And what will happen? At least some people will believe it. And the damage is done. So no wonder we are warned and warned and warned about making false charges, about slandering people. In Proverbs chapter 20, the wise man said this about slander. Proverbs 20, verse 19. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. Stay away from them. If someone tells you something about someone else, ask them, how sure are you of that? You know that for a fact? Did you see it? Did you witness? So don't repeat. Be a good neighbor. That's what it means to be neighborly. Loving your neighbor means you don't slander. You don't spread false reports. You don't gossip. In Acts chapter 6, the account of Stephen, we see what happens when people do that very thing. Acts chapter 6, we'll begin reading in verse 11. Acts chapter 6, verse 11. Stephen is being accused of blasphemy. Verse 11 says, then they secretly induced men to say, we have heard him speak blasphemous words against Moses and God. And they stirred up the people, the elders and the scribes, and they came upon him, seized him, and brought him to the council. They also set up false witnesses who said, this man does not seek to speak blasphemous words against this holy place and the law. For we have heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth will destroy this place and change the customs which Moses delivered to us. They secretly induced men. They set up false witnesses. And we know exactly what happened to Stephen. They stoned him. So be just and fair. That's what it looks like to love your neighbor. And finally, loving your neighbor means that you desire what's best for them. Whatever is best for your neighbor, that's what you want for them. Our text back in Leviticus 19, the last two verses, 17 and 18, says, you shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Hateful thoughts can lead to hateful actions. In 1 John chapter 2, John, when he's writing that first letter, says beginning in verse 9, he who says he's in the light and hates his brother is in darkness until now. He who loves his brother abides in the light, and there's no cause for stumbling in him. But he who hates his brother is in darkness and walks in darkness and does not know where he's going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. See, what starts on the inside as darkness can be exhibited on the outside as darkness. So no wonder the Bible says, watch your thoughts. Watch your thoughts. Whatever you have in your thoughts will come out in your deeds. So no wonder hateful thoughts can lead to hateful actions. So loving your neighbor means you don't have hateful thoughts about them because of what they can lead to. When you do need to rebuke your brother, you need to do so in a way that you do not sin. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. You know, there's a way to rebuke your neighbor and there's a way not to. He says, make sure you rebuke your neighbor in a way that you do not sin. In Proverbs 27, the wise man tells us more about how to do this. Proverbs 27, verses 5 and 6. Open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Open rebuke. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Be open and honest with them, and do so with a desire for what's best for them. Because sometimes you need to rebuke your neighbor. I mean, that just will happen. So make sure you do so in a way that doesn't involve sin. And finally, realize, like the text says, that we're not in the vengeance business. In other words, that's not part of why you and I are on earth, is to take vengeance against people. In Proverbs chapter 20, again, the wise man tells us about this. Proverbs 20, verse 22. Do not say, I will recompense evil. Wait for the Lord, and he will save you. You know, God says, vengeance is mine. And when he says, vengeance is mine, that pretty well excludes everybody but himself. So vengeance is his. It's not anybody else. So we're not to take vengeance on others. So loving your neighbor also means that you want what's best for them. You're going to be careful about what you think, about how you act, and understand that vengeance is not yours. And it's interesting as we conclude that loving your neighbor as yourself is considered a royal or kingly law. In James chapter 2, James tells us this in verse 8. James chapter 2 and verse 8 says, if you really fulfill the royal law, according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you do well. It's a royal law. It's the law of the king. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. If Jesus didn't love us, he wouldn't have died on the cross for us, that's for sure. So he had what was best for us in mind. And if he hadn't, again, he wouldn't have came, and he certainly wouldn't have died. So when we love our neighbor as ourselves, we are practicing the royal law. That's what loving your neighbor looks like from the Bible. We're honest and open and just and fair. We're concerned about their needs. We're concerned about their self-esteem. We're wanting what's best for them at all times. That's what it actually looks like. And it's a wonderful picture for us of what Jesus meant when he says, love your neighbor as yourself. Tonight, David has picked out an invitation song. Maybe we haven't been loving our neighbor as ourselves, and maybe it's time to do something about that. Maybe it's time we confess wrong and ask for prayers. Whatever the situation is, we certainly encourage you to come as we stand and sing this next song.